Lecture 10, Underground Jerusalem.
Now we go back across the Atlantic to the Holy Land. Again, to a devout age, to a time when there was an intense popular interest in the historical accuracy of the Bible. In this lecture, we visit Jerusalem and the Holy Land. We describe the first efforts to investigate ancient Jerusalem in the mid-19th century. As a result of a survey of the Holy City in 1863, British Army engineer Charles Warren tunneled deep below the city streets and found remains of the walls which dated to biblical times. In the first part of this talk, we recount the beginnings of biblical archaeology and set Charles Warren's researches in a broader context. Like George Smith's flood tablets, Charles Warren's Jerusalem diggings showed that the Old Testament had a foundation in actual historical events and archaeological sites. In the second part of the lecture, we describe later researches and highlight the tension between sacred and secular interpretations of the archaeological record found by Warren and others. We're going back to the period of the great Assyrian discoveries of Botha and Layard, which, as we said earlier, came at a time of intense interest in biblical history. These were crude excavations, but they produced enough for Henry Creswick Rawlinson to write the first outline account of Assyrian civilization. But the Assyrians were only a shadowy presence in the Old Testament, in the second book of Kings. The Holy Land itself, with its prominent monuments and its close associations with the life of Jesus, was, of course, a different matter. In 1838, an American historical geographer named Edward Robinson traveled through Palestine and succeeded in identifying many biblical sites. He returned a second time in 1852. His work was fairly scholarly, and so was that of Dean Arthur Stanley. Both of them laid the foundations for widespread later activity, which was mainly involved surveying and mapping and the occasional excavation of sites in Palestine. But the first intensive activity came at the hands of a British Army officer, Captain Charles Wilson, who was born in 1836 and died in 1905. He was a Royal Engineer, part of the mapping and engineering part of the British Army. And in 1863, he handled an Ordnance Survey expedition to Jerusalem to make an accurate survey of the biblical city. In Britain, the Ordnance Survey is the official agency designated to compile maps. Wilson's survey was successful, and it was resolved to follow it up with more survey work in the Holy Land, much of which, of course, was not concerned with archaeology at all. It was concerned with acquiring general knowledge and particularly with water supplies. Another army officer, Lieutenant Charles Warren, who was born in 1840 and lived until 1927, was the next person on the scene. Warren was commissioned into the Royal Engineers, like Wilson was, in 1857. He then spent 7 years surveying defence works in Gibraltar, that massive rocky fortress at the mouth of the Mediterranean in Spain, overlooking Morocco. This rock is a maze of tunnels, and this experience gave him a great deal of work and experience in both excavating, designing, and strengthening tunnels. As we will see, this was of enormous importance when he came to Jerusalem. In 1864, Warren was posted to Jerusalem to survey its topography and water supplies. Now, Warren had absolutely no ambitions to do any archaeology at all, and stumbled on biblical Jerusalem purely by chance, because his work took him underground. Today, urban archaeology, the study of the ancient occupation layers underneath the very heart of modern cities, is commonplace. There are extensive archaeological programs in New York, Boston, Annapolis, Maryland, Washington, D.C., to mention only a few. And in Europe, in England, in London, in Dublin, in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, in Paris, and so on. This is extremely complicated archaeology. It requires deciphering complex histories of buildings and other structures, because people who live in cities are constantly rebuilding, tearing out foundations, building a new building on top of an old one, using part of the old building, tearing out staircases, rebuilding them, remodeling a house, expanding, closing streets, opening them up, and occasionally even experiencing large urban fires which burn down an entire city or parts of it in the days before modern fire precautions. So this sort of archaeology is very, very complicated. And if you walk through the center of London or New York, you are really walking on history. The techniques for doing this sort of archaeology are very difficult indeed, because most of the time, given the value of urban real estate and the density of occupation, you are literally doing archaeology through a little postage stamp dig on a small lot in the heart of a city often surrounded by skyscrapers. Warren's work was different because he was tunneling. Then, as now, Jerusalem was a politically very volatile city, a holy city to at least two religious faiths, and a place where many people were paranoid about the notion of digging under the modern city or in the vicinity of ancient shrines. Warren became an archaeologist almost by accident, because his work involved, for obvious reasons, since he was doing water supplies, a great deal of surveying underground. And, inevitably, during his tunneling, he and his small team of men uncovered archaeological remains. They literally bumped into them. Now, this wasn't excavation like Austin Henry Layard had done, where he was following walls of a room. These people were looking for culverts, drainage patterns, and occasionally they would come across an architectural feature. For example, in 1863, they uncovered a monumental arch which had once formed the entrance to biblical King Herod's palace. Herod's temple, which was built on the ruins of an earlier temple built in the first century BC, had been demolished by the Romans in AD 70. But parts of its wall survived and became the Western or Wailing Wall, one of Judaism's sacred sites. So it was hardly surprising that Warren's discoveries astounded and delighted his fellow countrymen. This was a few years before the discovery of the biblical tablets by George Smith, which we talked about earlier. This was in the years when there was a tremendous furor in England about the antiquity of humankind, where the very notion of the biblical chronology for history, the 4004 BC date for the creation compiled by Archbishop Usher in the 17th century, was being undermined by the findings of science. A deeply troubling time for the devout. So when Warren returned with reports of having found parts of Herod's palace, it's small wonder that among the intelligentsia, and particularly the religious, There was great enthusiasm. And in 1865, his researches resulted in the formation of the Palestine Exploration Fund, under the patronage of none other than Queen Victoria herself. One of the few archaeological enterprises to achieve royal patronage, the Exploration Society ensured that biblical archaeology assumed center stage. Warren was seconded from his army duties for another expedition in 1867. This time, he had what you might describe as incendiary instructions. He was to excavate under the Haram Esh Sharif, a walled compound that housed some of Islam's most sacred shrines. Warren was operating in extremely difficult political circumstances. The local authorities were incensed at the notion of any excavation. At the best of times, it was very tough work. As Warren once wrote, "It was a very hazardous work and gave me intense anxiety, for apart from the desire to prevent loss of life, there is no doubt that if I had met with any serious accident in which we were not ourselves killed, there would have been a very strong feeling raised in the city against us by the Turkish authorities, and that at least would have stopped the work." In other words, some of the time, most of the time, he was operating by sleight of hand and by stratagem. The problem was that the Ottoman authorities, who were nominally the governors of Jerusalem, were an Islamic civilization, was an Islamic government, and they were paranoid about the notion that anyone would tunnel into the innermost recesses of a city to them, like to Christians, was sacred. So they placed obstacle after obstacle in front of Charles Warren. But they met their match. Warren simply carried on with his water surveys and with great ingenuity surreptitiously tunneled underground outside the city walls. That was okay. Then he surreptitiously tunneled inward, right in to the walls of the most sacred shrine, the Haram. He found that the 80-foot-high walls of the Haram extended, believe it or not, more than 100 feet below the surface. He eased his way with judicious drives in the face of constant threats. He sank 27 shafts, which enabled him to trace the northern and western limits of the old city, and he followed the walls of Jerusalem far underground. But what was even more remarkable, unlike Austin Henry Laird, who basically tunneled and recorded, and Botha, who did the same, everywhere Warren made meticulous plans. He crawled through buried passages and down murky shafts, mapping the topography of the buried biblical city. People threw stones at them. There were collapses of boulders in the trenches. They reached dead ends. But he persisted. And from this came the very first insights into the layout of Jerusalem, biblical Jerusalem. Eventually, the situation got so bad that Warren had to stop. The Sultan of Turkey, who was tightening up generally on excavations, flatly refused any more permits to excavate and forbade any more excavations in Jerusalem in 1870. By this time, Warren had a mass of information, and he returned home. And he wrote a popular book, quite simply entitled Underground Jerusalem. None of the sort of incidents of travel or my experiences in so-and-so and so-and-so along the Hindu Kush. He simply wrote Underground Jerusalem. And that's exactly what the book was about. It was about tunneling under Jerusalem. The book received wide acclaim, wide attention, and was a bestseller. Not a particularly well-written book by the standards of Layard and Stevens, but a good piece of work. In 1885, his academic monograph on the subject, The Survey of Western Palestine, appeared in 8 volumes. These Victorians were pretty industrious folk, and it is still useful today. So here was the first evidence that excavation was a profitable way, and I don't mean financially profitable, of course, I mean intellectually profitable way, of checking the historical veracity of the Bible. And biblical archaeology entered a period of popularity which was unprecedented. Warren himself never returned to archaeology. He enjoyed a distinguished military career in southern Africa, and in later life, he not only became Commissioner of Scotland Yard during the time of notorious Jack of the Ripper murders, but also developed a reputation of being somewhat of an eccentric. But his name in archaeological circles was insured simply because he had the courage to tunnel under Jerusalem. Charles Warren's Jerusalem surveys provided the first systematic framework for biblical archaeology. They also showed just how difficult this sort of excavation and research was to complete in the face of opposition not only from local religious leaders, but also from local politicians. Then as now, the region was very volatile. And for a number of years, the Palestine Exploration Fund now changed its tactics. Instead of excavating in Jerusalem, it focused on surface surveys. For example, between 1871 and 1877, the Palestine Exploration Fund completed a survey of Western Palestine, most of it under the leadership of another army lieutenant, Claude Conder. Of main interest here, beyond the lasting results of the survey, which covered 6,000 square miles, and the results are still invaluable for archaeologists today, was the fact that one of the surveyors was a young lieutenant named Kitchener, later to become Lord Kitchener of Khartoum. Condon himself wrote a book which has the magnificent Victorian title of Tent Work in Palestine, published in 1878, which describes this survey. Never far behind, the American Palestine Exploration Society, founded in 1870, resolved also to participate in biblical archaeology. They carried out another survey, this time in eastern Palestine, parallel to the British endeavor. However, this time there was trouble. Local opposition was so strong that the project had to be abandoned and the society was disbanded. With those two surveys, it was time for a change of tactic. But 20 years were to pass before such excavations began. The trouble with biblical archaeology at that time was that there were not a large number of spectacular sites which were susceptible to the sort of excavation which Layard and Botha had carried out in Assyria. And the work carried out by Warren, apart from being politically very volatile and extremely arduous, was really not that yielding of finds. It was more yielding of architectural features and little details which tended to confirm broad facts in the Bible. The first large-scale excavations in Palestine came later, and they came under the aegis and leadership of one of the great archaeologists of the late 19th and early 20th century, an Egyptologist, Sir Flinders Petrie, whom we will discuss extensively in the context of Egypt later in this course. Petrie's vast Egyptological experience gave him experience that was invaluable when it came to excavating ancient Palestinian cities. Above all, he had experience of small objects, because in Palestine there were layer after layer of prehistoric occupation in Bronze Age cities, which could only be separated by the use of small objects like fragmentary clay vessels. Flinders Petrie in Egypt had been the first person to realize the importance of pottery as a way of dating the past. And he brought these methods to Palestine in 1890 with an excavation at the Bronze Age city of Tel el Hesi. There, he excavated extensively and used changing pottery types to identify different Bronze Age and Iron Age levels. What he started to do was to look back before biblical archaeology to the earlier antecedents, to periods long before Joshua's siege of Jericho or the Assyrian invasions of Israel, to look back at the prehistoric roots of the indigenous societies from which these known historical entities sprang. The only way he could do that was to dig deep into large city mounds. This process of excavation continued right through into modern times and culminated in the 1950s with explorations of the earliest settlements at Jericho, under the city of Jericho, which proved to be one of the earliest human towns in the world, a town with stone walls. So by the end of the 19th century, underground Jerusalem had led to the foundation of a sub-discipline of archaeology, biblical archaeology, which drew not only on historical sources, not only on the scriptures, but also on archaeological findings. But it had also moved on. You'll recall with the flood tablets, the big excitement about that was that it proved that the Bible had a basis in historical fact. What the flood tablets did not prove was that the Bible was the literal historical truth. And fairly soon, biblical archaeology moved beyond the notion that by digging into the past, you could prove that the Bible was literally true. It showed that archaeology could illuminate aspects of the biblical narrative. A good example, for example, is the Assyrian bas-reliefs now in the British Museum, which show the siege of Lachish, which is described in the second book of Kings. In the bas-reliefs, you see the attacking army climbing siege ladders while the defenders rain their heads with missiles of all kinds. You see the capture of the city and the parading of the prisoners in front of King Sennacherib, some of them being executed. And you see him reviewing the booty collected at the city. There is an intersection between archaeology and biblical history. But we also know from Warren's work and from the early surveys that slavish insistence on the historical accuracy of the Bible could obscure the objective testimony of archaeological sites and artifacts. But ever since Warren tunneled into biblical Jerusalem, archaeological investigations in Palestine or in the Near East have involved a tension between the sacred and the secular, a tension unique in archaeology. Most of the early civilizations which we study and discovered are early, far before the purviews of the scriptures. But in the days of Warren, most educated people still studied Greek, Latin, and the scriptures. And fairly naturally, they believed that archaeology offered a chance to check the factual accuracy of other events of the past. In fact, this notion that archaeology was a handmaiden of history spilled over into the discovery of other civilizations as well. Today, we know that the historical accounts of the early civilizations are only part of the picture. With Egypt, we saw how the decipherment of hieroglyphs illuminated a civilization and brought to light the anonymous people, the commoners, the priests, the artisans. With the decipherment of cuneiform, we obtained information on the deeds of rulers expressed in grandiloquent terms. But we also got searchlight into the lives of ordinary folk, lazy schoolchildren, farmers' almanacs, priests, chants, even epic literature. You have to look at biblical archaeology somewhat in the same light. The scriptures give us an outline of history. Archaeology fills in some of the details. But in fact, our knowledge of the complicated history of the biblical period is a matter of marrying archaeology with scripture and archaeology with history from all other sources. The point about archaeology today, and this is an important point which really bears on the rest of this course, is that it is not a subject on its own. You do not go out now and dig ancient Nineveh or dig into ancient Jerusalem. You select a problem, like, for example, the architecture of Herod's palace. And you apply to this not only archaeology, but the science of architecture, written records, environmental data from food remains, information on water supplies, the list goes on and on. The notion, as it has always been, is to reconstruct an extremely accurate picture of life in the past and to explain why things happened the way they did. Why did Herod build his palace the way he did? Why was it burnt down? And you look at the whole picture. And the pioneer efforts of Charles Warren under Jerusalem really brought that home, that anything you did in a tunnel, anything you did in a survey, was just a teeny part of a very complicated historical jigsaw. This applies also to the classical authors. One of the great literary sources in education in the 19th century, beyond the scriptures, were the writings of the Greek poet Homer. I vividly remember, as a high school boy, being taught by an extraordinary teacher, an older man, who knew the whole of Homer's Iliad and Odyssey by heart, in Greek and English. And for me, he made the epic live. And the past came alive, the people, the epic tales, the myths of Odysseus, of Agamemnon, of Helen, of Priam, and of Hector. And it lived with its pathos, its drama, its bloodshed, and its warfare. But the question that was always at the back of one's mind, as it is with the Bible, did these events actually happen? Did Homer exist? Was the Iliad like the Bible? The truth? Did the Trojan War happen? Did Odysseus go back to Ithaca, as it says? And this was the challenge of archaeology. And apart from digging under Jerusalem, a German archaeologist, as we'll see in the next lecture, went out to try and find Homeric Troy and succeeded.